Our text this morning will be Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 through 6. Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 through 6. This morning I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell you, and then I'm going to tell you, and then I'm going to tell you what I told you, and maybe by the end you'll remember what I've tried to tell you. Here's what I'm going to tell you this morning. Yahweh, and I'm going to use Yahweh. I know that it's in your English translation, this is what shows up in all caps, is Lord, right? But I'm going to use Yahweh because Yahweh is a special name. It's a covenant name. It's a name that shows intimacy and closeness with God's people. In the context where it's given in Exodus chapter 3, the name Yahweh appears in the context of God's promise to be present with his people. And so the name Yahweh becomes this scrunched up, condensed version of this promise that he would be present with his people. Yahweh alone is worthy of our hearts. First, we're going to see in verse 5 the heart that he longs for, and then we're going to see in verse 4 the claim that he makes, and then in verse 6 we're going to see the resources that he provides. Focus your attention with me, if you will, on Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 through 6. Hear, O Israel, Yahweh is our God, Yahweh is one. And you shall love Yahweh your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. And these words, which I am commanding you today, shall be upon your heart. So far, God's inerrant and inspired and authoritative word. May he add his blessing to it. This morning, I want to talk about your heart. By heart, I don't mean the hollow muscular organ of vertebrate animals that by its rhythmic contraction acts as a force pump maintaining the circulation of blood. Thank you, Merriam-Webster. And I don't necessarily mean heart as it's tossed about in our culture today, right? Some of you are tender-hearted because you're deeply compassionate. Some of you have a big heart because you're very generous. Some of you have given your heart to that special someone. And if you feel disconnected with that special someone, you might ask to have a heart-to-heart, right? And they might speak to you from the heart. I'm sure no one here is heartless. Though you might know somebody who is, and if you did, you might tell them to have a heart. Some of you came in this morning lighthearted. Others of you are losing heart. And some of you are brokenhearted and have unimaginable heartaches. This morning, whether you're lighthearted or losing heart, I want to talk about your heart the way the Bible talks about your heart. You see, in the Bible, yes, you feel with your heart, but you also think with your heart and act with your heart and remember in your heart and know in your heart and say in your heart, and you impress words on your heart and you desire with your heart and you obey with your heart and you grieve in your heart and you walk from your heart. You can have a heart after God's own heart, like David, or your heart can be turned away after other gods, like Solomon. And if your heart is turned away after other gods, then Yahweh implores you to return to him with all of your heart. You see, the heart is not just the seat of the emotions. It's the seat of the mind and the will and the emotions. It's the control center of your whole life. It's the foundational core commitments that drive who you are. As Waltke and Longman in their commentaries on Proverbs wrestle with how they should translate heart. What does heart mean in English as it's used in Proverbs? The closest thing that they can come up with is motives. Your heart essentially is your motives. It's a motivational structure. It's what Edwards would call the religious affections. It's the inclination of your soul. What are we saying? What is it that you're mainly committed to? What is it that you've set your deepest hopes on? What do you find most attractive and most beautiful? What really gives you meaning? You see, your heart is constantly searching for something to fix on. It's looking to be captured by something beautiful or excellent or praiseworthy. It's seeking glory. It's looking to adore something, to behold something, to dote on something, to worship something. It's never a question of if you're going to worship something. That's inescapable. You will. It's a question of what you're going to worship, what you're going to set your heart upon. So what have you set your heart upon? How can I know? I don't know. How can I know what I've set my heart upon? How do you spend your time? Alan Curry, in Intro to Ministry, used to give a rather insightful assignment at the beginning of the semester where he would have all of his students lay out the first 2 weeks of their seminary career, and you had to account for each 15-minute block in those 2 weeks. And at the end of the week, you got to see how you were spending your time. How you spend your time will tell you what your heart is set upon. What do you daydream about? What are your greatest nightmares? What if it was taken away from you would make life no longer living? What makes you angry? These are ways to know what you've set your heart upon. Keller uses this example, speaking about anger. Let's say that both you and your friend get insulted. But you get really angry by the insult and your friend doesn't. Why? It's because you've set your heart on your reputation. What really matters to you is what other people think of you, but your friend doesn't, right? So your emotions can point, allude to what you've set your heart upon. This morning, Yahweh is after your heart. Yahweh is after your heart. Did you see the heart that he longs for here in verse 5? Look at Deuteronomy 6 in verse 5. You shall love Yahweh your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. Now, the three phrases here in Deuteronomy 6 verse 5 are kind of in a positive format. That means that right, each former phrase is expanding the one that came before it. And so it's unpacking what it means to love Yahweh with all of your heart. So what does it mean to love Yahweh with all of your heart? Well, yes, it means that we set our affections on him. But the verse goes on to unpack more than that. It means that we're to love him with all of our soul, right? The word here in Hebrew is nefesh. We're supposed to love him with every breath that we take, with all of our soul, with our very life. Right? And then it goes on to say we're supposed to love him with all of our might. And the word here in Hebrew is actually an adverb, not a noun. It's used here as a noun, but it's actually an adverb meaning very or exceedingly. It's a very rare use of an adverb in this noun kind of format. The idea here is that you're supposed to love Yahweh with all of your heart, with every breath that you take, and down to every molecule in your being. Have you set your heart on Yahweh like this? Have you loved him with your whole heart, utterly, completely? Is he really what you find the most beautiful? Is he really what gives you meaning? Is he really what you've set your deepest hopes upon? I think if we're honest, right, we fail at this every minute of every day. And we can fail in so many different ways. But I'll mention two ways we can fail to love Yahweh with all of our hearts here. Distraction and indulgence. Distraction. One of the ways we can fail to love Yahweh with all of our hearts is distraction. Some of us choose to deaden our hearts. Maybe you've felt those deep longings and yearnings and wants and desires. Or maybe you've felt the deep restlessness of your heart. And so you choose the anesthesia of busyness. It's distraction. And in our culture, it's available in abundance, right? And it's not just those distractions that we might think of as sloth. You know, turn off the TV, get off of Facebook, shut down the internet, avoid all the useless and insignificant trivia that clutters our lives. But the distraction, the busyness, can come in the form of so many good things. Lists and projects and service and work and so on. And in the busyness, in the distraction, we forget our lover. And we deaden our hearts and control our circumstances. And so we're no longer available to be wooed. We're no longer available to be romanced. We can also fail to love Yahweh with all of our hearts via indulgence. Some of us choose to look for Jesus in so many lesser things. We're on this search for transcendence, something beyond us, something that we know that is out there that will finally satisfy us. And so we throw ourselves at the idols of Vanity Fair. We're looking for transcendence in immediate gratification or addiction or money or sex or power or control or reputation or sports or accolades or grades. And so we wrench our hearts to one false god after another, and we're no longer available to be wooed. We're no longer available to be romanced. So how do you fail to love Yahweh with all of your heart? It's not mutually exclusive. It can be distraction or indulgence. It can be distraction one minute and indulgent the next. Sometimes we can be distracted and indulgent all at the same time, and there are so many other ways that we can fail to love Yahweh with all of our hearts. Do you see how impossible it is to do this? We can't do it. In fact, no one in the whole Old Testament has done it. The closest thing that's used in the Old Testament to this language is King Josiah. King Josiah in 2 Kings 23:25 is said to have turned to Yahweh with all of his heart and with all of his soul and with all of his strength. He doesn't love Yahweh with all of his heart. That's not what's said in the text. What's said in the text is that he's turned to Yahweh. And of course, as Josiah turns to Yahweh with all of his heart, there are wonderful things that happen. There's reform in Israel. The mediums and spiritists are driven out. Worship is restored, right? But he didn't love Yahweh. He merely turned to Yahweh. And the next closest thing that we have is Joshua and Caleb, part of the first generation Israelites, who are said that they followed Yahweh wholeheartedly. And of course, they're the only two first generation Israelites that are permitted to enter the promised land. But they didn't love Yahweh with all of their heart and with all of their soul and with all of their strength. But there was another. Jesus loved the Father. In John 14:31, Jesus says, "So that the world may know that I love the Father, I do exactly as the Father commanded me." You see, Jesus' perfect love and his perfect, Jesus' perfect obedience points to his perfect love. And of course, when Jesus is asked about the greatest commandment, do you remember what he says in Matthew 22:37? He answers with Deuteronomy 6:5, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind." And of course, we know that Jesus kept all the commandments perfectly. So we can say then that Jesus loved Yahweh with all his soul and with all his heart and with all his strength. And it is only because Jesus kept this commandment perfectly on our behalf and replaced our heart of stone with a heart of flesh that we can even begin to fix our heart on Yahweh. And it's only because Jesus kept this commandment perfectly on our behalf and replaced our heart of stone with a heart of flesh that we can even begin to find him more and more beautiful. And it's only because Jesus kept this commandment perfectly on our behalf and replaced our heart of stone with a heart of flesh that we can even begin more and more to set our deepest hopes on him. It is because of what Jesus has done that we can begin to shake our heart free from those empty idols that have captured our affections. It's because of what Jesus has done that we can begin to free our hearts from the distractions that pull us away from our one true love. It's because of what Jesus has done that we can begin to fix our hearts on Yahweh. But how? How do we begin to fix our hearts on Yahweh? How do we let Yahweh become what gives us our deepest meaning and is the most beautiful to us? Well, the text unpacks that, both in the claim he makes and the resources he provides. First, the claim he makes. How do we love Yahweh with all of our hearts? Look at the claim he makes. Hear, O Israel, Yahweh is our God. Yahweh is one. Now, I'm going to suggest a slightly different translation of Deuteronomy 6:4 this morning. You see, in Hebrew, that last phrase, Yahweh is one, is literally Yahweh Echad. And Echad, yes, it can be translated one, but it can also be translated alone. And for those of you who are worried about the Septuagint, ace is the word used here in the Greek, and it can also be translated as one or the only one. Now, the only other time that Yahweh Echad appears in your Old Testament is in Zechariah 14:9. And there in Zechariah 14:9, it's not translated Yahweh is one. It's translated Yahweh alone, or Yahweh as the only one. So what would that look like here? Yahweh is our God. Yahweh alone. Now, that translation would continue the argument that Moses has been making thus far in the historical prologue of Deuteronomy 1 through 4. Moses has been arguing, Deuteronomy chapter 1, that Yahweh alone was your God after the Exodus, when you received the law, when judges were appointed, when you spied out the land, when you failed to enter the land. Yahweh alone was your God, Deuteronomy chapter 2, in the wilderness wanderings. Yahweh alone was your God, Deuteronomy chapter 3, in the initial conquest where Yahweh delivered Og, king of Bashan, into your hand. Therefore, Deuteronomy chapter 4, obey because Yahweh alone is your God. It actually says this explicitly in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 35. Turn back just a couple of pages in your text, if you will. Deuteronomy 4, 35 reads this way. To you it was shown that you might know that Yahweh, he is God. And then what? There is no other. There is no other beside him. And just four verses later in Deuteronomy 4:39, know therefore today and take it to heart that Yahweh, he is God in heaven above and on earth below. There is no other. Do you see the claim that he makes? He's saying that Yahweh is our God. Yahweh alone. And if Yahweh alone is our God, then we don't need to hold anything else back as if we were reserving it for some other God. We can love him completely. We can love him utterly. We can love him with all of our heart and with all of our soul and with all of our strength. By making this claim, he's doing something. Do you see it? He's wooing your heart. He's romancing you. It's not just some barren command, love me. He could do that. He's the sovereign king. But instead, He woos us. It's like asking someone to marry you, right? You see, if you're going to ask someone to marry you, and now I have your attention, right? If you're going to ask someone to marry you, how do you do it? Well, first you have to prove yourself worthy of their love and the history of your relationship. And then, before asking for their heart in marriage, if you're smart, you're going to recount the story of your love. You're going to show them how faithful you've been. You're going to tell them how much you love them. That's what God is doing here. In this covenant proposal, he looks back over their history and says, "Do you see how faithful I've been? Do you see how well I've loved you? There's really never been anyone else. Not really. I know that you've chased after others, but I'm the only one who has ever truly loved you. I'm the only one who's looked after you. I'm the only one who's met all your needs." He's wooing your heart. So Moses says, "Yahweh is your God. Yahweh alone. There is no other." And if we're going to begin to set our affections on Jesus and let his beauty capture our heart, I think that we need to look back at our own stories and see his tender care, see his provision, see how he was there when everyone else deserted us, see how he loved us when we were unlovable, and see how he has been faithful when we were faithless. Then we will begin to see the claim he makes that he alone is worthy of our worship, that he alone is worthy of our love, that he alone is worthy of our hearts. Yahweh is your God. Yahweh alone. Can you feel him wooing your heart? Maybe even a little. So in verse 5, we have the heart that he longs for. Verse 4, we have the claim that he makes. And again, the question here is how? How do we love him with all of our hearts? Verse 6, we have the resources he provides. The resources he provides. Look at Deuteronomy 6 and verse 6. "And these words which I am commanding you today shall be upon your heart." So, the question that you have to ask here when we get to verse 6 is, what are these words? Right? Well, he gives you a clue in the next phrase. These words, what? "That I am commanding you today," right? "That I'm charging you with today." And so what are these words that Moses is charging Israel with today? It's the book of Deuteronomy, right? Remember that Deuteronomy is a sermon that's shaped like a suzerain vassal treaty that points to covenant renewal. So these words are the sermon of Deuteronomy that he's preaching to Israel today, to the second generation Israelites on the plains of Moab, about to enter the promised land. So what has he said thus far in the sermon? Thus far in the sermon, these words that we're supposed to put on our hearts, right, have included how Yahweh alone has been a God to Israel, right? Throughout the historical prologue of Deuteronomy 1 through 4, after the Exodus, during the wilderness wanderings, in the pre-Deuteronomic conquests. And then, after the historical prologue of Deuteronomy 1 through 4 comes, that's right, Deuteronomy chapter 5. Very good. And in Deuteronomy chapter 5, we find what? The Ten Commandments, right? And so, in the Ten Commandments, we see the holiness of God in his perfect law. But the Israelites say something very interesting, that they see something about the character of God in his law. Look back to Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 24. The Israelites say, "Behold, Yahweh our God has shown us his glory and his greatness." His glory and his greatness. Where? In his law, in the Ten Commandments, right? So these words, going back to Deuteronomy 6, verse 6, include Yahweh's covenant faithfulness, how he alone has been a God to them, Deuteronomy 1 through 4, and his glory and his greatness and his holiness, chapter 5. And so what are we supposed to do with these words of Yahweh's covenant faithfulness, his glory, his greatness, and his holiness? These words shall be on your heart. In the movie The Missing, Tommy Lee Jones plays a father who has deserted his family because of wanderlust. This is set in the days of horses and cowboys and such. And he's betrayed his family. He's left them behind, and he's gone off and kind of wandered and become an Indian, right? And there's a scene in which he's talking about these two natures within him. There's this civilized nature, and then there's this wanderlust kind of nature. And he describes those two natures as two dogs fighting within him. And at the end of the movie, he's asked which dog is going to win. And he says, whichever dog I feed more. You see, if you're really going to love Yahweh with all of your heart, if he's really going to capture your imagination, if he's really going to become more beautiful to you day by day, you have to feed that dog. Luther would put it this way. He would say, you need to what? Preach the gospel to yourself every day. Why? Because whatever you meditate upon will feed your affections. Moses says, take these words about Yahweh's covenant faithfulness, about his glory, about his greatness, and about his holiness, and put them on your heart. Do you see how well Yahweh knows us? He knows how weak we are. He knows how quickly we forget. He knows how easily our hearts are distracted and enticed by lesser lovers. And so he whispers to us, remember, put these words on your heart. I alone am your God. I alone am worthy of your heart. And as we remember these words of his faithfulness and his glory, his greatness and his holiness, our hearts will become more and more enthralled with this noble king who is wooing our heart. And as we meditate on all that he has done to woo us and win us, he will become more and more beautiful to us. And as he becomes more beautiful to us, we will set our affections on him more and more in this life until one day, at the end of all things, when, as Lewis says, the door on which we have been knocking all our lives will open at last, we will behold him face to face. And then we will finally see him as he truly is. And he will be so radiant and so unbelievably beautiful and so pure and so excellent and so spectacular and so transcendent that he will finally capture our hearts and satisfy our deepest desires utterly and completely. And then we will finally love him with all of our heart and with all of our soul and with all of our strength. Yahweh alone is worthy of our hearts. Pray with me.